Welcome to today's podcast from Nature 2030, an international campaign bringing together business, governments and the third sector to work together on the environmental challenges of this decade. These podcasts are part of our quest to bring together influential activists, politicians, business and thought leaders to focus on solutions. Today, we're lucky enough to be joined by businesswoman and renowned environmentalist Liz Goodwin, OBE, to discuss her impressive career in resource management and sustainability. Liz, a chemist by background, joined the Waste and Resources Action Programme, commonly known as RAP, in 2001 and became CEO in 2007 and remained so for a decade. During her tenure, Liz oversaw many successful campaigns, including the Love Food, Hate Waste campaign, and a campaign halving waste to landfill by the construction sector. She is currently Senior Fellow and Director, Food Loss and Waste for the World Resources Institute and Chair of the London Waste and Recycling Board, where her job includes getting the British capital on the path to reaching a 65% recycling rate by 2030, transitioning to a circular economy and zero carbon by 2050. So not much to do there, Liz. Welcome. Just as a first and foremost, I must say, in my household alone, I'm sure we're getting through less food waste, because that is one factor of always being at home, you know, rather than buying for a whole week and then maybe going out one or two nights and throwing out the salad that kind of goes rotten at the back of the fridge. We do seem to be using it all. Do you think that might be something that is seen more widely?
I think so. I think people being at home means that they've got more time to plan and cook things from scratch as well, which I think is all good stuff. So, I'm hopeful that this will actually lead to us re-engaging with food a bit more. There have clearly been some issues with the supply chains, having to divert from feeding the hospitality sector to feeding us through retailers.
Mm. And certainly certain items like flour and stuff have suddenly become in short supply because we're all able to start baking and stuff.
Which we
didn't have the time to before. All we had time to is flop in front of Bake Off and never got around to actually baking. So let me start on our first question. Tell us a bit more about your background. What led you to pursue a career in environmental sustainability?
So I'm a chemist. I'm a scientist. I started working, in fact, in the chemical industry in a number of technical roles, but then I quickly moved into environmental roles. And I think I was probably also influenced by my family, because my stepfather and his father were very keen environmentalists. And my environmental roles in the chemical industry actually took me to some really interesting parts of the world. So I saw massive differences in standards. You go into Africa or Southeast Asia and seeing landfill sites there and comparing them with landfill sites back here. So I saw different standards and different approaches, and I think it just built from there, really.
So why does it matter to have a huge question like that sat on your shoulders?
I think I care about the world we live in, and I want to make it a better place for future generations. And I feel that this is something that I can actually make a difference to. It uses my skills and knowledge and expertise. Now, I think I've always wanted to help society in some way, and I could have clearly gone into a different part of working with society and for the benefit of society. But that wouldn't have played to my skills and expertise, and this is an area where I can actually make a difference.
And what motivates you to keep doing what you're doing?
I think my family, primarily. I watch my nieces and nephews growing up, and I want the world to be a better place for them. But it's also the knowledge that I'm, in my own way, I'm making a difference. I personally can't actually change the world or make it a better place, but I can help other people to do it. And it's, I think, probably the vast majority of my roles, I've been working through other people. So, you know, getting sites to operate more responsibly, getting businesses to work more responsibly. So it's I've been working through other people and helping them to achieve the fantastic things that have been achieved so far.
So a kind of puppet master in the background.
Well, that's one way of describing it.
you were CEO of RAP for 10 years. For our listeners that haven't heard about RAP, can you explain a bit more about what the charity does and its overall goals?
So RAP was set up back in 2000, and it's primarily focused in the UK, but increasingly it's working overseas as well. And it's all about trying to make sure that we use resources responsibly. and in a more sustainable way. So reducing the amount of stuff that we use in the first place, making sure that we use it as efficiently as possible, keeping it in use for as long as possible, and then making sure recovery happens at the end. So it's treating resources as precious and not just something that can be dug out of the ground and then squandered.
Now, we've got a panoply of environmental issues at the moment that we can choose from, really, from biodiversity, species loss, pollution, climate change. What do you think is the most critical environmental issue that we're facing today?
I personally think it's climate change, and that's partly because it links together so many other issues. It is significant. We can destroy the planet if we don't get it sorted out properly. But our use of resources is unsustainable. I don't think many people appreciate that actually our use of resources accounts for 45% of greenhouse gas emissions. So we can't just tackle the energy side of things in terms of tackling climate change. We do need to look at the resources. That's why all my work on resource efficiency is an important contributor to tackling climate change. And then within that, you've also got the whole issue of food sustainability. If we're going to actually feed a growing population, we have got to have a more sustainable food system, which is that links back to my work on food waste.
We've had some people advocating for vegetarian and vegan diets, saying that those make it more efficient. Are you an advocate of that?
I think I'm an advocate for a more balanced diet, so it's not just a complete dependence on meat. As we get a growing population and a growing middle class, there is a demand for people to have more Western diets. And if we can reduce the amount of meat that some of the countries use, then I think that's helpful, not just for the environment, but also to make sure that we have a healthy, sustainable diet and we're actually healthy people as a result.
Now, you talked about 45% of greenhouse gases being on our resources. How much of that percentage is in the way that we use those resources? I mean, how much could we get that 45% down by, do you think, by being more efficient?
Well, I haven't done the maths, but I would imagine we ought to be aiming for half of that. I mean, if you look at food waste alone, food waste accounts for 8% of greenhouse gas emissions, and the world is trying to halve it. Now, if we manage to halve food loss and waste around the world, then that would reduce that by 4%, which is that significant. So maybe we should be aiming for half across the board. But that, as I say, some areas will be more difficult than others to achieve.
Now, your role as chair of the London Waste and Recycling Board was given to you by the Mayor of London. What does that job entail?
Well, because I'm chair, I'm in the fortunate position of being able to mentor and coach the exec team and make sure that they've got all the resources they need and that they're heading in the right direction. And the work in London is essentially trying to make London a more circular city. Because it's such an influential city and so many other countries look up to it, it has the potential to be the leading city demonstrating best practice in both food waste, but also in the circular economy, making sure that London is a vibrant place that just doesn't gobble up resources at the expense of the planet.
And explain to listeners what the circular economy means.
So the circular economy is a phrase that I'd like to find another phrase for it because nobody really understands it. It essentially means that instead of just making something, using it and throwing it away, you think about the design, you use as few resources as possible, and then you keep them in use for as long as possible. So in a London where the circular economy was thriving, you'd have more service delivery businesses. So you wouldn't just need to buy stuff all the time because some of the things you did or you got would be done through a service model. And then the things you did buy would be built to last. You'd be able to get them repaired. There'd be a thriving reuse market. And then there would be the ability to recycle and recover materials at the end. So it's about just thinking about the resources that we use and making sure that we use them as efficiently as possible.
And we know that politicians often set goals quite far off in the future with a knowledge that they might not be around when that goal is met or otherwise. To have a goal in 2050, anyone can set that now in fairly good knowledge that they won't be there to answer in 2050 for that. So how realistic is the zero carbon goal of 2050? And are people taking it seriously, or is it one of those things that it will come along in 2050 and people say, oh, that was a goal that was set by people generations ago, or hopefully forgotten or that wasn't my fault. What's happening to actually get us there?
I think you make a good point. I mean, I think there's an awful lot of discussion about, okay, so what does zero carbon mean? And then you'll have the debate about whether it's net zero carbon or absolute zero carbon. And so I think an awful lot of it does come down to terminology. I think the whole point about setting a goal like zero carbon is to make sure that people feel it's important, and it motivates people who have got to work on it to actually make some progress towards it, and you can hold them to account. It will be difficult, especially when you have things that come along and throw the whole of the plans out of the water, probably for a year, with something like coronavirus. It will be difficult to achieve, but I think if the will is there, we have to achieve it, because we have to do something about tackling climate change, and having zero carbon cities is one of the elements of that. We've got to find ways of living in a more sustainable way.
And when we talk about trying to get to carbon neutral on things, sometimes we can offset. And at Higginson Strategy, we plant trees every month for every employee that we have to offset our own carbon footprint. But I know that there are people out there, George Monbiot being one voice, that has criticised offsetting at times, saying that it allows people to carry on living the way that they're living and just saying that they're offsetting. In your mind, is offsetting a good thing or is it not?
I think it's got its time. It isn't the only solution. It's never going to be the only solution, but it does make people think a little bit more. I worry that it might just become a way of saying, okay, I don't need to worry about it, because it's got to be for a purpose. I think it has a place, but it's not the total solution.
And do you have, with those targets that London has set at 2030 and 2050, are there incremental targets to make sure that you're on the path to hitting those?
Well, those are the targets that the mayor's set. What within London Waste and Recycling Board, we produce a business plan to cover shorter periods, and that has specific targets for the next few years. And those are all meant to be helping us to get towards those longer term targets.
Great. I'm going to move to your role as the Director of Food Loss and Waste at the World Resources Institute. Tell us a bit about that problem specifically.
Well, it's been estimated that as a world, we waste around a third of the food that's produced. And that food waste counts for 8% of global greenhouse emissions. And it's also been estimated that that costs nearly $1 trillion dollars to the global economy. So it's a substantial issue that needs to be tackled. And if you then look forward at population growth projections, and the fact that actually even now we've still got a lot of people who go to bed hungry every day, we have clearly got a mismatch about the amount of food that's produced and then wasted and our ability to feed a growing population. And if we're going to be able to feed that growing population, we need to have a more sustainable food system. So tackling food loss and waste is an important part of that. And I've been working on food waste probably since 2007 when I was in RAP. And I was, when the Sustainable Development Goals were first launched in 2015, Sustainable Development Goal 12.3 is all about food waste. So it's about halving global food loss and waste by 2030. And I was one of the founding champions for 12.3. And the Champions 12.3 group is basically a coalition of leaders from around the world and different parts of the food sector, who are all committed to trying to make sure the world achieves that halving of food waste by 2030. And then when I left RAP, I joined WRI because WRI provides the secretariat for that initiative. So now my role is essentially trying to make sure that that champions initiative to help the world drive towards a halving of food waste is as successful as it can be.
Brilliant. Tell us, for those people that aren't working in policy and aren't working in those areas, What are some of the simplest things that individuals can do to be part of the solution?
I think the simplest thing that each of us can do is to reduce the amount of food that we waste as householders at home. The figures for household food waste are extraordinary, especially in developed countries and in cities. By way of example, in the UK, it's been estimated that 70% of food waste arises in our households. So, you know, that means that each of us can actually do something about it. And I think you can make it tangible for people. I mean, it's really simple things. You know, you buy what you need and then you use what you buy. And I think the current coronavirus pandemic is showing us actually that if we plan, we can actually buy the food we need and then we can use it. So I often have a few tips that I give people. Writing shopping lists, that's a really simple one. Look in your fridge before you go shopping and write a shopping list. Make sure you use your freezer. So if you've got things that are sitting in the fridge and think, oh, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to use that in time, you might be able to freeze it, and that will be a way of extending its life. Make sure your fridge is at the right temperature, and try to make sure you understand the difference between use-by dates and as-before dates. But there are some really simple things that people can do to just focus on reducing their own, the amount of food that they waste.
Remind us of the difference between a use-by date and a best-before date.
So a use-by date is put on a product that could become unsafe if it goes past the date. So it's basically been developed having looked at product deterioration. So it'll generally be on fish, meat, dairy, things like that, which could become harmful. The best before date is a quality mark by the manufacturer, retailer. So it'll be on things like biscuits and crisps.
So we can ignore best before and just give it a try. And if it tastes fine, we can just have it.
That's what I do.
Do you ever waste food? As the food waste czar, is there anything that you do? I mean, I'm going to put my hands up straight away. I always judge rice wrong. I just absolutely struggle with that one. And the other one that we probably do too much of is fresh vegetables. But any food waste in your house?
So I am fairly obsessive. I mean, I can probably tell you the dates on everything in my fridge at the moment. And I try desperately hard not to waste food. When it's just myself and my husband, we're actually not too bad. We generally, it's very rare for us to waste anything. At the moment, I've got my mother and my husband's uncle, who are both quite elderly, staying with us. And that's far more difficult because trying to judge the amount they're going to eat is really difficult. And there's only so many times you can find a way of using up the leftovers.
Who inspires you the most?
Well, it's been different people at different points in my career. I think the person who often comes back to my mind is the person who was my first chair at RAP. I was new as a CEO, and he was a massive thought influence coach, mentor. And he inspired me because he was always very calm, and he always asked the right questions, and he had very good judgment. And it was never about him. It was about the end goal. And I think that is something that I've always tried to emulate as well, because I'm not naturally a person that wants to be in the limelight. It's about the things that I'm trying to achieve that are the most important. And so I think that Vic Cocker was my inspiration.
And what are you proudest of in your life?
I think the work that RAP did on food and food waste. We are still the country in the world that knows the most about food waste, and how much is produced, why it's produced, and what needs to happen to reduce it. I remember when we were first doing that initial piece of work back in 2007, we were all very nervous about publishing that report because we didn't know how it would be received, what the reaction would be, whether anyone would care. And I was even worried about the numbers. Have we got the numbers right? Because the figures were so high. You know, I remember having a conversation at about 4 o'clock in the morning with myself, sort of saying, have we got the decimal point in the wrong place? And then when we put the report out, it got a massive response. And that was extraordinary. And every time food waste hits the media since then, it gets a lot of coverage and a lot of attention, because it's, nobody can think food waste is a good thing.
Yeah. Do you know what the most wasted item is in the UK?
Well, it's often fruit and vegetables fruit and vegetables, but also bread.
Yeah.
So it's those sorts of things.
What's been your biggest failure?
I often think that haven't been bold enough at all points. I wish I'd been bolder sooner, because it took me a while to sort of realise that actually I could do things which I had previously thought, that's not Liz Goodwin. I wish I'd been bolder, quicker.
What book or film or piece of music or poem would you recommend to our listeners now that they may have a bit more time on their hands in lockdown?
Well, I love listening to La Bohème, Puccini opera. It's inspirational. I've seen some fantastic performances that make you cry. I mean, it's a silly story, but it sort of transforms you into a different place.
Wonderful. Liz Goodwin, thank you very much indeed for joining us on Nature 2030.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Today's Behind the Story interview was brought to you by Nature 2030, a campaign run by Higginson Strategy. Higginson Strategy supports government bodies, NGOs, charities, companies and individuals, all within the business of making the world a better place. To hear more about our work or get involved with our positive campaigns, go to our website at higginsonstrategy.com.